This is Fanboy versus Transformers with Brian Kilby, Rob Clay, Diecast, and Chris Triplett.
This is Fanboy versus Transformers. I am your host for this episode, Brian Kilby. With me, we have Chris Triplett, Rob Clay, and Diecast. We're going to be talking about Transformers versus G.I. Joe number 6. Guys, how's it going?
Excellent.
Good.
Awesome. So let's just go ahead and get started with this. In the last issue of Transformers versus G.I. Joe, the alliance between G.I. Joe and the Autobots was defeated by Megatron and Cobra. And after being missing for several years, Optimus Prime makes his return on Earth, and he's here to recover Bumblebee. In this issue, things are bleak for the Autobots and G.I. Joe. G.I. Joe is under attack by Cobra and the Decepticons, but first by Optimus Prime. The Joes are replaced by a new fighting team, and the Bot Joe Alliance, Captive Alliance, are shipped off to meet their doom, with the exception of Roadblock, whose skill set has made him useful. At the issue's climax, things are stacked up against G.I. Joe until Battle Force 2000 shows up. And that's really the most coherent summary I can come up with, because otherwise this issue didn't make a lot of sense.
No.
So I love this comic. Yes. I really, really love this comic. But it exists in some alternate universe where cocaine wasn't removed from Coca-Cola. It's like I had to read the issue twice, and I had to read the author's summary like three times to figure out what happened in this issue. Admittedly, this has been my least favorite issue so far.
Oh, you know, I feel like I'm reading this comic wrong every time we get a new issue. I feel like I need to like print off every page and then like put them on a wall and look at them all at the same time in order to make sense. It's like you know, like there's a puzzle to it or something. And I'm just not seeing it.
So I don't really understand what happened to this issue, and I guess spoilers to jump ahead to the end, it was all a dream, or maybe it wasn't.
Like, well, you know, that is Dr. Mindbender, so you can't trust that.
Okay. So
you read the notes,
yes,
and basically those two pages are there. I'd like to point out this issue comes out in like the second week of April. It may have been planned for the first week of April at some point, but basically, that last page is there because people keep telling John Barber and Tom Scioli this is how they expect it to end. So this last page is entirely there just to get that out of the way so that when it comes back next month, everybody knows, no, that's not how it ends. There's never going to be any follow-up to it. It's never going to be referenced again. It's this is the, no, it's not really ending like this, shut up page.
See, here I was hoping it was going to be just one of those crazy plots, you know, that's in the storyline, like where, you know, Snake Eyes is like everywhere and he's always doing crazy shit, you know. I was kind of hoping that it would be like one of those plots.
I know that they said that and I want to take it that way, but still I read through the whole issue and it ties to the last issue, so it seems like it wants to be continuity between the last issue. Obviously we don't know until we have issue 7, which we'll have in 2019, but you know, it's just like General Flag, when he presents to who oversees G.I. Joe that they want to nuke Cybertron, which I thought they already wanted to do that.
Okay, and I think I need to explain myself here, Brian. I don't mean the whole issue is never going to be referenced again. I just mean that last page.
That last page
has nothing to do with anything, and we're going to pick up from the second to last page next month.
So again, it's confusing. But like, the thing is, this is like, it's a Jack, like the thing I love about the comic, it's a Jack Kirby fever dream. Yes. I mean, it's like, I think I'm reading this. I don't know. Like, I could be asleep right now. Somebody wake me up, or I think I'm running a fever. I don't know. But like, such crazy crap happens in this issue.
Yeah. Like, we talked about this before, like in comparison to like, you know, non Transformers comics, to me, it feels like a Grant Morrison issue. You know, every issue does. It's like, I mean, it feels like all this stuff is happening, and it's happening so fast, and it's like my brain isn't big enough to comprehend everything. But to Grant Morrison, it would have made perfect sense. So, it's just I haven't read every issue yet.
So we should probably actually get into watching the book, but I do want to point this out. Like I said, I read the author's commentary twice. The first thing that John Barber said, he said, even for this comic, this is a really weird one. And it's true. So General Flagg is presenting to whoever oversees G.I. Joe. I don't know that they actually got named about the plan to nuke Cybertron, which I love. And it cuts to basically Roadblock, who, because, you know, people forget that Roadblock's a chef or a cook. Cobra decides that since he's captured, they want to use him because he's a really good cook. I mean, you know, we know who trains Cobra. We know who, like, the Cobra psychiatrist is. But does Cobra have a cook that we know of?
Not that I know.
So it kind of makes sense that, you know, which I think it's brilliant that they actually want to use Roadblock as a chef. But the rest of the Joes, who Autobots, who really aren't needed, are boarded or have to basically board Astrotrine, who's a full train, not just the engine.
Yes. That was a great photo, by the way. I'm like, it's a snake. No, it's Astrotrain.
It's Astrotrain.
Yeah. The line at that point in the comic is my favorite line from this book. Might be my favorite line from the entire series so far. Did you read that part? Did you remember what I'm talking about?
What was the line?
It was basically the part where it says, if you catch the train, make sure you kill the train, or he will make you his passenger too. I thought that was awesome. I want that on a poster. I want that on a t-shirt.
That sounds like something that Jim Morrison would have written.
Yeah, I know. That's why I love it.
So basically, after all that happens, a joint front of Cobra and the Decepticons invade the UN and offer up a chance for the nations to basically side with Megatron and Cobra, which I thought was pretty cool. But then it cuts to the pit where Optimus Prime is basically attacking it looking for Bumblebee. Which, you know, Bumblebee was basically, I guess, was he really killed in issue zero?
Well, his head is around Megatron's neck, right? I mean, that's his head. And then, like, the body, you know, they've had the body, and we assume he's dead. I mean, because...
But who really knows?
His body's gone through some transitions. I mean, it was General Flagg's Bumble cycle at one point, and now it seems to be a headmaster under the control of Dr. Venom.
It is a Bumblebee headmaster on Soundwave's body. I want that as a toy.
It took me a couple readings to realize that that's what Soundwave's new head was.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Because Soundwave basically shows up under human control basically to take down Optimus Prime. The issue then cuts to that boardroom wherever General Flagg is, and he's told that basically the Transformers are no longer the concern of G.I. Joe because G.I. Joe has been replaced by G.I. Jonin.
What?
Which is a bunch of ninja G.I. Joes. Like, that was unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, that came out of nowhere. I mean, I love that this book is basically written by a 9-year-old.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of it.
You know, I kind of took that, Brian, as like the late Marvel comic as a reference to that. Because didn't the late Marvel comic just become all about Ninja Force crap like that?
And I don't mean the 9-year-old comic thing as a knock against the book. It's beautiful.
No.
It's beautiful that it's written that way.
Yeah.
I mean, it shows a lot of bravery writing the comic the way that they actually write the comic. And kudos to Barber and Scioli for the work that they're doing. And this is not my favorite issue, but I still loved it.
Yeah, I still really liked it.
I still loved it. I mean, it's not like – I can't put my finger on what it is. Maybe it's what you were saying, Triplett, that you maybe you think you're reading it wrong. So you think that you're not smart by not getting it.
Yeah.
So if you like it and you think – and you, by thinking it's good, it makes you smarter or look smarter. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's something like that. So the thing that really jumped out to me in the whole issue, though, was when at the pit, the Joe vehicles transform and merge into Bruticus.
Yes.
And I want that so bad.
It's one of those, why didn't Hasbro do this 10 years ago, 20 years ago?
I don't know necessarily this isn't a Hasbro hasn't done it yet. I mean, couldn't this be a future Hasbro thing? Because, like, if we're getting a Combiner Wars Bruticus at some point, I mean, could this be some... They've done G.I. Joe Transformers crossovers before. Could this not be a future San Diego Comic-Con thing?
And that G1 Bruticus mold has been repainted so many times. Why not into this?
Yeah.
Well, I would rather it be the Combiner Wars one. Yeah, I was about to say, I could see this as being a Combiner Wars thing pretty easily.
I would much rather it be that, yeah.
Especially, you know, if we get a stealth bomber looking kind of mold to be as a chess piece somewhere down the line.
I love that the comics, because they do the little introductions every time a character shows up, and it says, Bruticus, we aim to maim.
Oh, I love those little file cards. Yes. I love the file card convention that they've done. It's great. But, like, all seems lost, and then Battle Force 2000 shows up.
What the heck?
Yeah, I've read the author's notes several times. I half understand what happened in this. Sadly, there are no Vikings or anything in this issue. Yeah. But
do have Optimus Prime with a lightsaber, and his trailer is wings on his head.
I love that Optimus shows up and he's gliding on his trailer.
That's like that crazy. Look a whole lot. I kind of want that as a toy in some way. It would be hideous, but I kind of would like to see that.
Yeah, I like that as kind of a G1 interpretation of movie Optimus Prime and his flight trailer.
Yes!
It's like, if they did that with the G1 toy, this is what it would look like. You know,
I kind of want to take a rubber band and take a G1 Optimus and just like put them together somehow.
Yeah.
That's such a great idea. Diecast, I know you read this issue, and you've not been reading this consistently. I take it, I get that feeling from you. What did you think about issue 6?
I'm just glad everyone agreed with me that I was like I was reading it and I was like, am I that dumb? Because I'm really like, I know I jumped in at issue 6, but and then I read the first part of John Barber's description of the issue, and he's like, this one's a little weird, and I thought he may have said confusing in there, but may I added that in myself, and I was like, oh, thank God, the author agrees with me, so I'm good.
So you had not read the prior issues?
I have not read the prior issues. I am going to go back and read the prior issues.
They're so fun.
I think this is a book where you actually probably don't have to read every issue. I mean, literally, this is a book that it wouldn't help if you read zero.
Yeah, you know? It's going to inform you on a couple of things. It's going to let you know to a certain extent why people are where they are now, but it's not going to be like a moment of enlightenment where everything you see suddenly makes sense, because it's not going to.
And again, like when I said that, like I felt like maybe I'm reading the comic wrong and I should like print off the pages and post them all on like a wall at the same time. Thinking about it now, maybe it would be easier to follow if you actually took, like, say, Snake Eyes pages and just read those, because then maybe it would flow better. Or just the pages with Rodimus and his story, because it's sort of like mini stories. I mean, it really is. It's like really, really quick glimpses into what's going on with a specific group, and then it cuts to G.I. Jonin.
Okay. No, go ahead, Rob.
Yeah.
The thing about this, the thing that made this make sense for me, and I think I'm feeling a little bit less lost than everybody else for this issue, the secret to understanding this comic as a whole is that this is the opposite of writing for the trade. This is writing for the page or even for the panel. Yeah. Things are invented to fill that space and look cool at that moment, and eventually they might build something else, or you might just have this really neat page that you wound up with.
Yeah, they're just amazing pages, and they do a lot of the splash thing too, where you'll get like two pages together, you know, and this just huge, just like everything. If I could say one positive thing about Transformers versus G.I. Joe, it's like the one book I'm getting now where I would kind of love to just have a poster of some of those, you know, splash pages where it's like two pages of just nonsense. Like having that on your wall would kind of be awesome.
One thing I really like about it, though, and especially the author's notes point this out, there's a lot of referential stuff in there that I wouldn't normally catch, like the the Macadam Bar or whatever it's called. Or
McAdams?
McAdams, that's how you pronounce it. That makes more sense.
I love that Snake Eyes walks into a robot bar, and it looks like he murders every Transformer in it.
I know.
It's freaking Snake Eyes. I mean, I guess it's a comment on like how awesome everybody seems to think Snake Eyes is when he's not, and why they made so many toys of him, but I don't know. It's just kind of hilarious. He kills a whole bunch of Transformers, and there's this guy begging him to say something. Just ask me a question, please. Just make it stop and ask me a question.
And there's the one like the dissection or the cutaway of the pit that it shows is based on a pre-existing art. I wouldn't have caught that had it not been referenced in the author's notes. In Battle Force 2000, I mean, who expected that? I mean, that's semi-obscure G.I. Joe stuff. So, it's such a fun book. And I think for people who really love G.I. Joe and really love Transformers, there are a lot of little Easter eggs like that are hidden away. Yeah. But you certainly don't have to be a hardcore nerd to enjoy it. You just have to have an open mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think you have to know anything about either of these properties to enjoy it. It's just written in that way where it's just like you just sort of take it in. I mean, because if you just
let it
wash over you. Like if you go just to like any random page, you'll get like some amazing nugget of just craziness. Like I'm on this page now and it says Optimus Prime is the pit fighter. And he's like standing down into the pit. Just stuff like that, you know, it's just crazy United Nations field trip, and then a bus lets out Cobra agents and then transforms into a Decepticon. You know,
I love that. I mean, it's such a fun book.
I've said before about this book that there are things that just fly by that other people would get, you know, a 6 or 12 issue miniseries out of that concept. And it's just there to fill the page. You know, General Flag's Bumble Cycle a few issues back. You know, that would have been like the focus of a whole big thing at one point, and it's just there and gone.
If they ever get to the point where they produce enough issues of this, like they get on track or something, and they can make a omnibus for this, oh my God, what a book that's going to be.
Like a larger format book?
Yeah, like something that has like every issue, like I don't know how many issues it's going to run to, but every issue together, oh my God, it'll just be like, you'll read it and it'll be kind of like me and you reading Crisis on Infinite Earths all in one sitting or something. It'll be like, what?
I would rather have, I think instead of having like one edition that has all the books, I would rather have an edition that has like much larger pages so I can hold it, you know, and just sort of take it all in. Like
those old kind of magazine.
The Treasury editions or whatever it was?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah, something like that, or like the complete series that DC would do.
Yeah,
I would just love to have this on larger format pages. I think like magazine size. I think it would be beautiful.
I actually bought the first trade of the books through Comixology because they had a sale on it a while back.
Yeah,
just so I'd have a digital copy of it, and like I can read it, and I do enjoy it, like reading it like on a tablet, but it's definitely a book where I think you can get a whole lot more out of it on a page, like you were saying, like if it was a larger format page also, it'd be even better.
Oh, so you've been reading it through the physical copy, because I've been doing Comixology.
Yes. Okay. And I think that you kind of get a little bit more out of it doing the physical one, but the Comixology copy is just fine. I mean, you can still enjoy it.
So the physical trade just came out recently. I might pick that up, and that way I can sort of loan it out to people, as I know people that have been wanting to read it. And it would be a good way to sort of get people into buying or reading Transformers comics. I was hoping that Humble Bundle that came out recently would be like the catalyst for some friends of mine to read More Than Meets the Eye, but that really didn't pan out. So more likely than not, they're really would probably be more inclined to reading Transformers versus G.I. Joe. Guys, do we have any other commentary around this issue that we want to get out? I mean, it's really kind of a one-and-done deal for me. I think I mostly understand it, but I really enjoyed the experience.
Yeah. I think it's a book where you kind of have to enjoy the experience so much as – more than, you know, worry about understanding it or worrying about where it fits in the larger story. The larger story is going to be – a confusing surprise no matter what you get out of any given issue.
Yeah.
The one thing I do want to add is that the I really like the one alternate cover, the Ottawa Comic Con cover by Derek Charm. I like that style, and I would like to see him do some interior work on a Transformers comic at some point.
Is that the one that had Grimlock and Snake Eyes?
Oh, that's the one where
Optimus Prime and Duke playing hockey with 90s. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that one. Holy crap.
Yeah, that's a great cover.
So I just want to point out the one that it was in the issue that I failed to mention. It was General Hawk shaving.
Okay. What?
You remember that general? I think it was General Hawk shaving in his bathroom, and it had the shower. No, it was an issue in the issue, okay. And it had the shower curtain. He had this rainbow shower curtain. It was like white with this rainbow pattern, but hidden in the rainbow pattern was Storm Shadow.
Wait a minute, that was last issue, I think.
Duke? I thought that was this issue. No, you're right, it was last issue. It was Duke. So, sorry,
because
I was trying
Duke
to
– Duke was pretending to be a Cobra agent, and Snake and Storm Shadow found him out and attacked him in the shower. That's what happened.
Yeah, that was last issue. Okay, never mind. Sorry. That was last issue. Yeah, I reread 1 through 5 today in preparation for 6. So, okay. But that was an awesome scene.
Yeah, that was awesome. One quick note, though, like the first page is pretty awesome too, because I just noticed this while we were talking about it. But it's the whole sort of Cobra's interpretation of the Book of Genesis.
You know? Yes.
So, but the thing I noticed was that they mentioned that, hey, Tonal Rat's missing, but if you look, Tonal Rat is sneaking in between the panels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I thought that was really awesome.
God, it's such a fun book.
Yeah.
Okay, Diecast, do you have anything?
I was going to say the one thing that we didn't talk about was that Cerebros had a human inside of him.
Galen,
and it seemed to like blow all the Transformers' minds that this was happening.
So according to Megatron, it potentially changes the course of Cybertronian evolution.
Yeah, he says it throws all theories about the origins of life in the universe into question.
Oh yeah, that was
and then
Destro.
Someone's like, oh my! I think my Decepticon's broken because he was just like he was stunned.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it was totally, you know, it was unexpected. And Galen is that was Galen from the Headmasters comic.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the Marvel Headmasters comic. So that was a reference to that. That was I'd forgotten about that. So if you haven't actually gone and read the Headmasters comic from Marvel back in when – I guess that came out in like 87 probably, that was a really, really fun read.
So it seems like there was just like a lot going on in this issue. Like if you blinked or you read over something too quick, you missed something.
Can I'm going to be guys really real... interested to see what you think next month, Diecast, when you've had a chance to read the previous 5.
Yeah.
That is going to be fun.
Let me ask you guys a question. So I'm on the page where Shockwave is trying to take Soundwave back, and Optimus is like tearing Bumblebee's head off of the body. And there's a bunch of little green skeletons popping out of his chest. What is that? Like, who is that?
Okay, that's the one I really did need the notes for. Those are basically G.I. Joe sacrifices made by Dr. Venom to make the whatever dark magic is reanimating Soundwave work.
That's right. They did mention that in a previous issue, didn't they? Okay. That's all right. I was like, what in the heck are those? Because they look like Joes, but they look like dead Joes because they've got like helmets on their heads.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And that is exactly what they are.
Wow.
And the guy who let Dr. Venom do that has just announced he's in charge of Earth.
Nice.
It's a great book. So I'm actually sitting here thinking about Galen. Was it Galen in the from Nebulon or whatever it was in the Marvel comic, or he was from something else? It's been 15 years since I read this.
I believe he was the original. Yeah, he was from Nebulous. I believe he was the original head of Fortress Maximus. Well,
okay,
Cerebros, but you know,
yeah, God.
I was thinking they were all from Nebulous in that comic, but I don't know. It's been years since I've read it. I have no idea.
Yeah, they were. As I believe Galen dies, and then Spike replaces him, and he's the only.
That's right. That yes. Okay, because I knew there was somebody else. It was Spike. Okay, yeah. Not crazy.
No, you're not.
No, you're not crazy. Not
yeah,
yet.
Spike replaced him. That makes sense.
Maybe after another issue of this, you might be.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, so that was a nice little reference.
Oh, yes.
Okay, cool. Guys, anything else?
I think I'm good.
Pretty much does it for me. So that'll do a Fanboy versus Transformers for this week. Next week, the guys will be back with Transformers number 40.
Need to catch up? Visit tfradio.net/Amazon and start shopping for collected volumes of all the Transformers titles. For comic book news, reviews, and more, visit tformers.com. Fanboy vs. Transformers is a Radio Free Cybertron production.